Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soci.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soci. The show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, it's available on Spotify. Well, friends, we got through another week. Hope you're staying safe. Hope you're staying healthy. Hope you're staying sane. Hope you're being good to one another. Hope you get your shot soon. I got mine, and hopefully you'll get yours. And hopefully you got to watch some good films, new or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. And we'll get to the grab-a-pencil portion of the show in a bit. I have to admit, right out of the gate, I cinematically did not have a productive week. For a couple reasons. One, at the household, which has now been dubbed Soci Hall, we had a little flooding issue in our basement, and the college students that live in our basement have moved up to occupy my screening room. The screening room. Not necessarily mine. It's everyone's. And so anyway, I just didn't get around to it this week. That's no excuse. That's just stating fact. I will try to be better next week. But even before that, the winds were really taken out of my sails last week with the death of Ed Johnsonat, longtime film critic at Nouveau and one of the founding fathers of the Indiana Film Journalist Society. And unfortunately, we knew this day was coming and we still didn't expect it. If you get a chance, go to Nouveau.net and read Chris Lloyd's feature, Ed Johnsonat, A Life of Brilliance in the Dark, as well as Requiem for a Fallen Giant on the Film Yap webpage. I think it was on Monday. I want to share this with you, the whole article. This is from the Film Yap, I'm a part of this, but anyway, listen to it anyway. The Indiana Film Journalists Association will honor the memory of its founding member, Edward Johnsonat, by renaming the annual Hoosier Award as the Edward Johnsonat Hoosier Award. Johnsonat, the longtime film critic for Nouveau News Weekly, passed away last week after a long period of declining health. The Ed Johnsonat Hoosier Award recognizes a significant cinematic contribution by filmmakers with roots in Indiana or a film that depicts Hoosier State locales and stories. The most recent award went to the documentary Athlete A, which chronicles the investigative work of Indianapolis Star journalists to uncover widespread sexual abuse in the USA Gymnastics. Johnsonat was known for his lifelong passion of film and distinctive writing style that employed personal reflections and shared insights into his own life. In his review of Finding Dory, he reflected how the sequel turned the kooky sidekick character in the first movie into the story of a special needs child and how that related to his own relationship with his beloved adopted son. Ed was a towering figure in Hoosier journalism, a gifted writer who would always put a lot of himself into everything he wrote, said IFJA spokesman Christopher Lloyd. We are devastated by this loss, not only of his insight of movies on movies, but his unparalleled humanity. The IFJA is proud to attach his name and legacy to the award celebrating Indiana films and filmmakers. And as a member of the IFJA, everything he said. Ed was the very first guest on Film Sociology back in, 100 years ago, the week we reviewed Frost Nixon. And I tried to have him on at least once a year. I'm going to share with you, I'm going to share with you a chat I had with Chris Lloyd about Ed, who is probably the closest friend that Ed had of the IFJA members. I got to write at Nouveau at the same time as Ed. I remember doing a couple of capsule reviews, and there were two film reviews I was allowed to do for whatever reason. I'm assuming Ed was out of town or was not feeling well. And I've always been grateful for the opportunity to take that full page and review Just Like Heaven, which I remember deeming as Ghost Meets the Goodbye Girl, the Mark Ruffalo, Reese Witherspoon comedy, and John Singleton's Four Brothers, which I refer to as an urban version of The Sons of Katie Elder, and that film made my top 10. So anyway, thank you, Ed, for your friendship and your patience and your space and for being you. So with that in mind, this is an interview I did with Chris Lloyd. This was recorded Saturday afternoon. I found out last Saturday morning at 10 a.m. And this was done, if I remember right, about 6 hours later. So, or 4 hours later, sorry. Anyway, here's my chat with friend and fellow IFJA member Christopher Lloyd on Ed Johnsonat. Chris, do you remember the first time you met Ed?
Yeah, as you might guess, it was in a movie theater. I don't remember exactly what the movie was, but it would have been sometime in 2005 after I moved to Indiana and became the entertainment editor of the Indianapolis Star. And probably Bonnie Britton or somebody was there, you know, or, you know, we're sitting, the press tended to sit in a single row or near each other. And so kind of hard to miss Ed with his personality and, you know, big guy and, you know, and he was also in a wheelchair. So that made him stand out. That's probably the first thing I noticed about him.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, because, you know, coming to the Indy Star, I was immediately supposed to be instructed that Nouveau News Weekly was supposed to be, you know, we were supposed to be adversarial because they were the alt weekly and we were the main newspaper and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But I read Nouveau every week as I did intake to kind of get all the voices. And what I say about Ed is I fell in love with his writing before I fell in love with the man.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he just had such a wonderful writing style that no one else really could mimic because it was Ed. It was, mm-hmm. he often talked about he did not refer to what he wrote about movies as reviews. He called them essays.
Yep.
And sometimes, I mean, literally, he had a couple of reviews or essays, as he called them, over the years where I remember where he might have only spent a paragraph talking about the movie. And the rest was just ruminating about something that the movie evoked for him. So, you know, reading his stuff was like, I say it was like sliding into a booth at a diner to have coffee to chat about movies with an old friend. Even if you'd never read anything of his before, reading one of his essays was like talking to an old friend. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's all right. You know, it's funny you make that reference. I immediately thought of the Barry Levinson film Diner when it comes to the camaraderie and chatting. I'm with you on because I was working at Nouveau when Ed was there, of course. And yeah, I don't know what the other departments were. I'm sure they were much more competitive, but I think we were all in the same boat of like, eh, we're not getting as much money as we should. But, you know, we get to see movies, so it's not bad. I remember with Ed, it's probably the same thing. I don't remember the movie, but I remember him being there. I also remember because I was writing music, and I love film, but that was his thing. And I didn't want to come off like Ann Baxter in All About Eve. I didn't want him to think I was gunning for his position or something like that. So, that aisle, that one row that we would have for you know, a couple times a week was developed into what is now the IFJA. Anyway, you were about to say something.
Yeah, so I remember probably after, you know, like the second or third screening that I saw him at, I just came over and introduced myself, and I just said, "Hey, I'm you know, it's Chris Lloyd at the Star." He's like, he said, "I know who you are. You're a new entertainment guy, and you're also doing some movie reviews." I said, "Yeah, Bonnie, you know, Bonnie Britton's still the film critic, but it's kind of my thing, and so I'm trying to, you know, like at least sneak one in a week or something like that." I told him flat out, I said, "I really admire your writing style. He's not like, it's like you're not trying to be anybody else."
Mm-hmm.
And I admit that, you know, his writing influenced mine over the years because, you know, so 2005 was a period where, you know, I was probably pretty full of myself. And I admit it. I mean, like, if I go back and look at reviews at that time, you know, my style was very much that sort of, like, authoritative, trying to tell you how it is, lots of big vocabulary words, lots of run-on sentences, stuff that I would just, you know, I would just, honestly, I would just wordsmith to death.
Yeah.
Until it read like, you know, something, you know, that a film professor would write and not someone who's just trying to talk to you about movies, not to be derisive of film professors. But so, you know, over the years, I've very much, you know, I wouldn't say I was trying to emulate Ed Sahl, but I would say his approach influenced me.
Yeah.
And I began to write much more simpler, shorter sentences, getting rid of, you know, I still throw in a 50-cent word from time to time, as an old buddy, old cracker friend from Georgia would say. But, you know, I found that the best writing is the kind that does not try to impress you.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed was very much all about that. He was the sort of guy that, you know, made a quiet impression on everyone.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned the sidetracks that he would have in his articles, because there were times, especially early on when I was still getting used to it, and I think I was more anxious about, well, what did you think of the film? And then I realized, and this has become a part of my program, is does anybody really give a rat's whatever about, you know, name of title part 6? But if you, yeah, you know, but if you're assigned to it and you got to write about it, you got to do something to make it interesting for yourself. And I think Ed was able to do that with numerous sides that made it more entertaining to read.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's how it started for me, was I fell in love with the writing. We got to know each other, so we always chat at screenings. I would usually try and sit next to him or near him.
Yep.
And then, you know, things just kind of developed between us. You know, I left the Star, or the Star left me, depending on how you want to put it. And he encouraged me to keep writing. And that was really the nugget there of how the Indiana Film Journalists Association got started. Was Ed mentioned, hey, you know, Bonnie and I tried to do something with creating a critics group a few years ago, and there just weren't enough people, there wasn't enough interest. And we also had a situation where the studios were really getting very stingy with us on the screenings, where even mm-hmm. big movies were not being screened in Indianapolis, even though, you know, we're a top 25 media market. And so we came up with this idea of, let's start an association, and we'll lobby for screenings, we'll give out awards, and we'll also try and nurture the next generation of film critics. Because, you know, we were at that stage then where it's like, not, you know, we were from a place where, you know, 15, 20 years ago, there was only maybe 100, 125 real film critics that were making their living from it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that number is much, much lower than it today. But what you have is you have thousands of people who are passionate about movies, that are writing about them, you know, in whatever format they can, on radio, on websites, a few still in newspapers. So it's sort of like, you know, this thing has evolved from being this niche that only a very small amount of people did, to now it's really become something that tons of people do, including here in Indiana. You know, I think you and I, are, as founding members, are both proud to say we went from 6 members that first year, and nobody knew who we were, and the studios couldn't care less about us giving out an award, and, like, you know, just absolute nothing. And, you know, now we have about 24 members, including a lot of people in their 20s and early 30s,
yep,
who are picking up that baton that Ed has passed to them. The studios, absolutely, not only do they pay attention to us, they actually reach out to us and solicit our opinion and ask us, you know, send me emails, when are you going to be giving out your award? And really, I mean, Ed is going to have multiple legacies,
yep,
as a writer, and that's one of them. But, you know, he and I became, as I say, we went from becoming adversaries to colleagues to friends. You know, he was probably the most important friendship I've had since I moved to Indiana 16 years ago. And, you know, I loved him. And I think we all did.
Yep.
Not to be corny, but to know Ed was to love him. He was just such a unique human being. I mean, he had absolutely no kind. He had no hatred in his heart whatsoever for anyone. You know, in a lot of ways, he and I came from polar opposite places. You know, geographically, culturally, sexually, politically. You know, we kind of stood on opposite ends of the field. You know, the whole thing of, you know, I'm at the Indie Star and you're at Nuvo, so we're supposed to hate each other. And we never did. And, you know, people are sharing anecdotes on Facebook and so forth about times where, like, you know, even when Ed was upset about something, you know, he would never yell at you or scream or holler or write a terrible thing in his platform. He would just sidle up to you in his wheelchair or chair or on a cane or however he was doing it at the time and just say, like, hey, you may not know this, but, like, you know, this is what you're doing is not so great. Maybe think about it. And that's just the kind of guy he was, that he brooked no hatred in his heart for anybody.
Yep, absolutely. It's funny because when folks are going to hopefully know more about Ed in the next several weeks or so, I think you mentioned in your write-up on the Film Yap, you know, he was doing reviews on Q95 a long, long time ago, and he had some syndication for a long, long time. And then, as you mentioned, the number of critics who make a living on it have dwindled, you know, of blockbuster-like numbers. But the fact that he kept going, he had his own webpage for a while, if I remember what Ed said, and I always thought of Ed still wrote for Nuvo way longer than I thought he would. And it's writing in a way or communicating like this, I've always made the compare, is like a shark. You have to keep writing. You have to keep putting out input. And
I
think
keep moving forward.
Yeah, and that was definitely Ed. I mean, you know, Ed, we had him as a guest on the film show and on No Limits. And, you know, if he was in an iron lung, he would demand to go and talk with John Krull when we did the film show on No Limits. And, you know, he wasn't going to let anybody or anything stop him from communicating.
Yeah. I mean, that's just the kind of guy he was. I mean, I think he had a lot of great loves in his life. And the movies was just one of them, but that's kind of the love that we started from, and then it moved to just two human beings who loved each other. And I mentioned that in my piece, you know, that was not a thing that I was taught when I was coming up, is that two men tell each other they love them.
Right.
But, you know, my only regret now is that I didn't say it to him earlier and more often.
Yep. You, how often did you pick him up for stuff? I knew you did, but I didn't know how much.
For screenings?
Yeah.
So Ed was living in his place downtown. He still had his car. He had a car, but he felt like he was no longer safe driving it. So what we would do is I would drive down from my place to his place, leave my car. I would drive his car with him and his oxygen tanks and wheelchair to a screening, and then we'd do it all in reverse afterwards. So we did that for a number of years. Not, you know, every week, but...
Right.
Probably at least once or twice a month. So, you know, all together we probably did that, I don't know, somewhere between, like, I don't know, 80 to 100 times, something like that over the years.
What would you talk about in the car?
Movies. Well, it was usually movie. The drive back from the movie theater was usually reserved for talking about the movie. What we'd seen, what we thought.
Okay.
Talking about other movies, you know, and that was sort of, you know, I do have a cinema's degree from New York University, but probably my second great film education was all those talks with Eds about movies.
EJOU.
On the way to the theater, would tend to be more personal stuff, just talking about what's going on in our lives, talking about, you know, what challenges we were having, offer each other advice, you know, talk about relationships with, you know, other people. Loved ones, sex. Ed and I talked about sex a lot, which is a fun thing for, you know, like sort of a straight-laced straight man like me and a guy who, you know, according to him, when he was 4 or 5 years old, knew he was gay and was never ashamed of it in any way. That was very enlightening for me to talk about how men relate to each other, both sexually and non-sexually. So, yeah, I mean, there really isn't any topic that Ed and I did not cover at some point during those discussions.
I think that's your Tuesdays with Maury play right there.
Yeah.
From with Ed. I had to pick him up, I think, a couple times to do recordings here at FYI, not to the degree of you did. The other thing was I often would get to the screenings if they were in the morning. I would tend to be the first one there, and I kind of waited for Ed. Because yeah, he would have that clunker car, and you know, you try to help a guy out whenever you can. So I didn't realize how much that you had to transport him to and from. So
yeah,
salute to you.
A few other IFGIA folks pitched in from time to time. I think Lou Harry did it a couple of times, and he was very grateful for that. But you know, I mean, for me, it was just an opportunity to spend more time with him. And I usually end up lingering after I drop them off at his place, sometimes for a few minutes, sometimes for an hour, and just going on. And, you know, I'll treasure those moments and conversations forever. So, you know, I mean, the movies is what brought us together, but, you know, it was just the start of something else.
It was always fun when he brought Donnie to his screening. And he was so patient with his son. His son was, you know, so excited about everything and was willing to talk to us about anything. And, you know, something is, from a parent, even something as gentle, maybe just a soft, all right, or a soft pat on the elbow or the shoulder. And that was it. Yeah, that was the only hostility that I don't even call it hostility, but that was the only response that I ever saw from him with Donnie when things he thought were getting too exuberant.
Yeah, and I don't know how many people know this. You know, they wonder about a man with the name of Johnson-Ott, and I don't know how many people actually know this, that, you know, his given name at birth was Ed Ott.
Ball player.
And he did that and he did that for many years. And, he, a lot of people don't know he was in a band called The Future back in the, I think, late 70s to early 80s. I actually have those CDs. He also did a couple of solo albums, and he was a wonderful singer. So I think when Donnie was about 10 or 12, you know, Ed met him and was talking about adopting him, even though he was a single dad or would become a single dad. And Ed was only not much older than Donnie. I want to say he's only like 15 years older than Donnie.
Wow.
But so Donnie's name was Johnson, Donnie Johnson. And so when they completed the adoption, Ed changed his name to Ed Johnson Ott so that Donnie would always be reflected in anything in his life.
There you go. Ah, I did not know that. Man, holy cow. Whew. Do you have a favorite write-up, a favorite review of Ed's? Because one immediately comes to mind for me, but I want to see where you go first.
Oh, I don't know if I can remember a specific movie because, you know, like I say, the movie, almost after time, the movie part kind of fell away, and it was the Ed part is what I really held on to and cherished. But yeah, probably the couple I remember where he literally only spent a couple of sentences talking about the movie. I think there was one where he started the review talking about the movie and then basically just said, I don't really talk about the movie anymore. It's really not that interesting. But it brings up this subject that I want to talk about. And then he spends the rest of the essay doing that. And I think there was another time where he just sort of was talking about his life and things that he's learned. And then the movie only came up about halfway through. That was just such a bold thing that I'd never seen a critic do before, is to, you know, barely have the movie in the movie article. So I think those are the ones that probably stand out for me the most.
Go ahead.
I think what's yours?
Well, you know what? It's funny you mentioned. I think also the fact that he had a page. He had a single page, I'm sure, that he had to fill. And I don't know how much of that was because he had a page and, you know, he had to fill the words. But it worked out, I think, to his advantage. It's so funny because the fact that Ed Johnson-Ott died Easter weekend, because my favorite opening line in one of his reviews starts, "The Passion of the Christ is a biblical snuff film." This was the beginning of his one-star review of Mel Gibson's film, and he just went off on the picture itself. And, you know, this was This was when this thing was making a gajillion dollars, and churches were bringing busloads of people in, and everybody was talking about it. And I think I gave it a 3.5 and said it was too long, like all biblical films. And Ed dug his heels in and just went to town on it. So much so that I have a conservative media friend who thought that there was a meeting at Nouveau that this was going to be written. And I'm like, no board's going to tell Ed what to write. That was all him. And, man, he took that thing to task.
See, he might have hated a movie, but he never hated a person. Like, I would never see him single out someone in a review, like a director or an actor, and basically just say, like, they suck and they're terrible and they
no,
give
that's
it
true.
Up and...
But yeah, there is one thing. There is one thing he would always like, because I remember he did this to Christian Bale in American Hustle. He will make fun of you if you put on or lose weight for the movie and show it off.
Yes. He didn't have much patience for all that, just because he felt like it was showing off for the camera. Yeah. And I remember when he would talk about things like that, he would go into this little voice where his voice would go a little higher, and he kind of talked in a little clip away, and like, "Oh, Christian Bale with his little belly,
yep.
I want to show you." Yeah. Or I remember someone ripped me recently on social media for talking too much about men's bodies and women's bodies in my reviews, or commenting on people's appearances.
I remember this. Yes.
Yes, and you know, that's something Ed liked to do. You know, never in a hateful way, but. You know, we talked about like how Chris Pratt, you know, how he was this schlubby guy on Parks and Recreation for years. And then when he got to be a superhero movie in Guardians of the Galaxy, he had to, you know, work out for 8 months so he could do his 5-second shirtless shot in the movie. And we actually did a podcast. I still have it somewhere called The Tyranny of the Six Pack. So that's something Ed and I both like to comment about how the movies depicted human bodies. Now, you know, not in a purient or hateful way, or making fun of like an actor has gained 40 pounds for a role or gotten shape for a role in that. Just, you know, like more the societal and cinematic influence of that, of like why did they do this? Why did they make that choice? What do they think they're accomplishing in the movie? And, you know, in his opinion, you know, why all those weight gains tend to be just kind of silly.
Right.
So, yeah, that was another topic that we both enjoyed sharing and speaking about.
Well, I think also when it comes to men and women's bodies, it's because we don't know how to properly spell. So, you know, it's phonetic, I guess. I don't know. It's funny that you mentioned, because you mentioned talking about the movies with him on the way home. And this is a little insight for the listening crowd. When we would be at screenings, and God, that day cannot come fast enough, I tell you. But there would be, when a screening would happen, we all wouldn't huddle up together and say what we're going to do. And sometimes there would be a rep outside, and we tried, you know, they'd want a brief comment for the distributors on what we thought. And so we kind of gave each other space and let them do that, you know, not overhearing, because it's not that we were going to steal, but we just wanted to let everybody have their own piece on this. But there were also times that we all kind of looked at each other and we all knew this film was great or this film was crap. And there would be little moments of snarkiness. I'm just as guilty of this as anybody. One of the moments I always remember was we had finished the screening of Ridley Scott's Robin Hood. And his band of not-so-merry men. Yes. And so we got done, and we're all looking at each other like, mm-hmm. And you could hear the knives sharpening in our heads. And a little bit of snark started to percolate. And Ed gets up from his seat to get into his wheelchair, and he says, "I'm not going to be a part of this." And he got up and walked out. Didn't storm out, just walked out. Because if I remember right, he liked the film, obviously, more than us. And he just didn't want to hear us, you know, blow snark on it. So,
yeah. It's an interesting thing, because I had never done that before. When I was a critic in Florida, I was part of the Florida Film Critics Circle when I was down there. We never talked to each other, communicated, or anything like that.
Right.
And we didn't really do it the first year or two I was in Indianapolis. But somehow that started, and Ed would kind of always be like the locus of those conversations. Because, you know, when we got to know each other and we started the IFJA, and I think we developed like a circle of trust.
Yep.
But like if somebody had like a, you know, during that conversation said something really, a really great line about the movie, the others knew like, okay, that's his or her line.
Yep.
And they're going to use it in their review and not me. But yeah, he also had this thing where he realized that there was obviously like a real surge of opinion towards a movie going in those little conversations afterwards, and that if his diverged from it, he would just be like, yep, I'm not going to sit in because, you know, he didn't want to be – it wasn't so much that he wanted to be the odd man out or he wanted to not have a disagreeing argument with them. He just realized like, okay, there's probably not going to be anything that I'm going to gain or give to this relation – to this conversation.
Yep.
And I'm just going to tap out. And he was very, very at peace about doing that. And I also learned that from him. As you know, as the IFJA grew and we started to kind of get this younger contingent of critics that kind of seemed to – I don't know. They seems like their opinions tend to just sort of flow in the one direction, maybe just because it's a generational thing. I've often had that myself in recent years where I'll be like, okay, I'm the man outside this time, so I'll not try and dissuade them or put in my two cents. I'll just idle on out and let them have their conversation.
Yeah, I think – well, and I've learned over time with the IFJA, there's always at least – every year at least one critic has one film that they will – champion regardless of what anybody says. I have three or four titles in my head immediately, but I also remember Ed saying more than once on these airwaves here, the only reason why he didn't like, apparently folks claimed the reason why he didn't like Scott Pilgrim versus the World was because he was old, man.
Yeah. I remember, I can't remember what year it was. It was probably just like our third year of IFJA. It was kind of a weak year for movies. And we had watched this movie, little movie, even today that hardly anyone knows about. It's a real cult film called Safety Not Guaranteed.
Yeah.
And and we all really liked it. We talked about it. And then when we got into our award cycle and then our awards day where we actually do like an hours-long meeting, and we just started coming up with this thing of like, wow, it seems like everyone really likes this movie. You know, could this win our best picture, this tiny movie that nobody saw and did no box office? And I mean, I remember Ed was really tickled about that notion.
Yep.
That it could do it. And in fact, it ended up winning our best picture. I think it is the only best picture award film it won from anywhere. The only critics group to give it the best picture. And I remember, somehow word got back to the filmmakers. That was actually Colin Trevorrow, if you recall.
Yep.
One of his first films, and Mark Duplass was in it. But I think even there's a quote somewhere where even he expressed, you know, amusement of his film winning Best Picture, and that's the sort of thing that, you know, I think the IFJA was all about, and really kind of, you know, Ed having been the heart of the IFJA, we love to find movies that other people were not talking about, that were not enjoying, and praise them, whether they end up winning an award or a runner-up or just, you know, something that we really praised. I think Ed, you know, working for an alt weekly, you know, kind of always being an outsider his whole life in a lot of ways, that he really appreciated the outsider perspective and he liked small, quirky films.
Yep. You just reminded me of one that I remember he championed, the documentary The Wild Parrots of Telegraph Hill.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry. This is, but yeah, you can go to the Film Yap. What's the name of the article, Chris, that you wrote?
It's called Requiem for a Fallen Giant.
Yes.
And you can read that on thefilmyap.com or thefilmyap.substack.com. And it's a bit long, I'm afraid to say. You know, honestly, I could have written it twice as long as it is. But feel free to check it out. I've got some other things in there about reminiscing about it, Ed and his writing and his life situation the last few years. And I have not cried yet. I had a little bit of a tear when I first heard, you know, but like right now, speaking with you, Matt, and in writing the article, what I most found was joy, just celebrating Ed. I mean, I kind of knew this day was coming. You know, I was hoping it would be at least a couple more years off. But, you know, that's what I've got in my heart for Ed is right now is just joy and celebrating a man who was just a giant in a lot of ways. Oh, crap. There's the tears. Sorry.
No, it's okay. You get it together. I'll jump on. What I remember, especially one of the big things that we connected on, that Ed and I connected on, was he said more than once that his favorite film was Local Hero. And I was
loved that movie.
I was stunned. I was absolutely stunned because I was I was 13, and I remember that and Tender Mercies, which you there's a yap for that, by the way. But that helped change my perspective on films, the concept of less is more. And I really, as a 13-year-old knucklehead, I really, really needed that. And so I was really, when I found out that he loved it, and for years and years and years, that was, you know, I try not to keep lists, but I do have a Criterion wish list. And finally, Local Hero got the Criterion treatment last year, and I was so excited to watch it again, and more people will hopefully get a chance to look at it. But if for Ed's sake, if you're listening to this, pick up an album by the Zombies if you don't have any of Ed's music already. You've heard the titles we've talked about. Also, check out Wild in the Streets. He championed the silly counterculture movie called Wild in the Streets with Shelley Winters and a very young unknown Richard Pryor in it, among others. But this was a kind of a minor studio's attempt at doing counterculture in the late 60s, and he just enjoyed that. And it's funny because I think of him enjoying that the way I would enjoy, you know, some of the midnight movie nonsense I've talked about on this program.
Yeah.
So. Well, Chris, I appreciate your time. I'm sorry it happened had to happen here, but you doing okay?
Yeah. Like I say, I think, you know, the tears, they're going to be there, but they're not going to last long because there's just, you know, I think we had so much love in our hearts for Ed, for what he did and for what he was, that, you know, the joy is what's going to endure.
That's Chris Lloyd of the Film Yap and fellow IFJA founding member and good pal, talking about our friend Ed Johnsonat. And Ed is already missed. Already missed. So I need to watch Local Hero again. I need to see if I own Wild in the Streets. I can't remember if I do or not. So, but thank you, Ed, for bringing all that to our attention. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Grab a pencil, friends. This is the time where we go to what you have been watching recently, and I'm glad I'm still able to do this. And trust me, friends, when I say I need this show and this segment as much as you do. So thank you for your contributions always to public radio goodness. We start on last week's post from Facebook. Thanks, Zuckerberg. Kevin writes, Paul. Leo writes The Little Things, Judas and the Black Messiah, Nobody, and tomorrow I'm seeing Train to Busan and Princess Mononoke. Very good. James writes Only Lovers Left Alive. Jim writes Jake's Law, classic unknown Western. Pamela writes Light of My Life, Out of Africa, and White Tiger. Joe writes North by Northwest. Urkel writes Troll Hunter, it's actually pretty epic. Excuse me. Kane writes Soul, Wonder Woman 1984, and White House Down. Nancy writes The Godfather Trilogy. Ooh. Lou Harry writes Badlands, Anything Goes, and My Cousin Vinny. Gretchen writes My All-American with the school kiddos. Judy writes The Spanish Prisoner and Star Trek II The Wrath of Khan. Is that a double bill, Judy? Callie writes The Chosen and season two premiere on Easter. I thought you were doing the Robbie Benson film, The Chosen. Sorry. Andra Faye writes The United States versus Billie Holiday and French Exit at the Theater. Congratulations, Andra Faye, that you were able to hopefully have a safe experience while watching Michelle Pfeiffer on a big screen. I wish I could have done that. Andrea writes, chaos walking. Dee Dee writes, Dee Dee Servino. Don't forget Cocktails with Dee Dee. Fun podcast. Occasionally her husband Paul shows up. There is going to be a new episode coming up very soon about Star Wars, the Star Wars saga, of which I'm a part of that. So thank you, Dee Dee. But Dee Dee writes, Ben-Hur, The Ten Commandments, Easter Parade, and The Agony and the Ecstasy. At the time of this post, Melissa writes, tonight I will be viewing Empire Records because it's Rex Manning Day. Yeah, I know more people that love Rex Manning Day more than I imagined. So thank you, Melissa, and thank you, Nanny G. Joni writes, Sweet Charity. Joe writes, Mission of Honor and Season 1 of Ozark. Erica writes, last night we watched the Riff Trax Rotor. Wow, was it dumb. A few days ago, we watched It Should Happen to You, which was apparently Jack Lemmon's film debut, also starring Judy Holliday and Peter Lawford. Lots of location filming in the mid-50s New York City, which was cool. Thank you, Chief. Roger writes, Hitchcock's The Paradise Case from 1947 and East Side Sushi from 2015. Steven also writes, Paradigm Case has a great Franz Waxman score, but has got to be one of the worst films Hitchcock ever made. But Roger liked it. That's all right. Susan writes, Dante's Peak and Fiddler on the Roof. Mike White, hey, Mike, all the movies related to Assault on Precinct 13 and Escape from New York. You're doing research, Mike. I appreciate it. Steven Back writes, the Oscar-nominated shorts, Southpaw and Grandma. Michael writes, Serenity, The Original Blob, Rebel Without a Cause, Ben-Hur, and Doolittle. Thomas writes, Stagecoach and Stargate. Chris writes, Days of Heaven, first time, what a gem. Good for you, Chris. I'm glad you got to experience that. That, yes, that's his Terrence Malick before my Terrence Malick rule came into play. Joe writes, One Night in Miami. Jonathan writes, Knives Out. Doug writes, current Oscar nominees, the one and only Ivan, Greyhound, Wolfwalkers, Love and Monsters, Quo Vadis, Aida, Lady and the Tramp, The Lady Vanishes from 1938, The Show of Shows, Marnie, and the Ken Burns Hemingway documentary. Movian writes, Hemingway. Temple Blake, starring Marion Hopkins, about a good girl gone bad. Mm-hmm. Carrie writes, Godzilla vs. Kong, because I live with a Godzilla fan extraordinaire. Nice. Robin writes, After Hours, still wonderfully quirky and funny. I hadn't seen it in decades, and yet I still remember all the weird turns and twists. Surrender Dorothy, Phil chiming in, love that movie. I'm with you guys on that. I saw that in the theater. I was 15, and that was my favorite film from 1985. Mid-80s Scorsese, just doing, at that point, it was a low-budget film that he was able to do, and that led to The Color of Money. That was the follow-up film. So, very cool. Glad you got that. I need to revisit that sometime. Kathy writes, Mr. Jones with Richard Gere, interesting take on bipolar treatment. Well, it's old 90s take on, cinematic take on bipolar treatment. Daniel writes, Ben-Hur, Down and Out in Beverly Hills, The Ten Commandments, Sound of Metal, Beautiful Thing, and The Coca-Cola Kid. Taylor writes, Carol, wow. Mr. Wright, After the Thin Man, Parker, and Sherlock Holmes. Tony writes, Satsi, as well as, as well as Good Night and Good Luck. Tom writes, Father of the Bride, the original, and Spy with Melissa McCarthy. John writes, Mary Poppins Returns, it was awful, zero magic, nothing was memorable. This is a Robbery, the Netflix documentary about the biggest art heist. Man from Laramie, The Nevadan, and Major Dundee. Hopefully, John, it was the director's cut of Major Dundee. I adore Sam Peckinpah. Didn't have to live with him. Eden writes, Concrete Cowboy on Netflix was great. Abby writes, Nightmare on Elm Street and The Amityville Horror, both original, the originals. And first time for both. Wow. I saw both of those in the theater. Corey writes, I, Dolores, King of Staten Island, and Shrek 2. Abby writes, Star Wars, episodes 4 and 5 so far. The Lost City of Cecil B. DeMille, a fascinating documentary on the 1923 Ten Commandments and eventual recovery of artifacts from the set location. I got a screener of that a few years back, Abby. I'm glad someone else got to see that. Britt writes Soul, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Hamilton, How to Train Your Dragon 3, Cradle to the Grave, and My Fair Lady. Deb writes The Midnight Sky. Terry writes The Las Vegas Story, The Bad and the Beautiful, and Any Number Can Play. Robert Muggy writes The Life and Death of Colonel Blimp, The Trip to Greece, Captain Conan, A Week's Vacation, The Great Beauty, and Babette's Feast. Oh, I need to see that again, Robert. Thank you for the tip there. Charity writes Moxie. James writes Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde. Robert writes Aretha, all 8 hours of it. It was first class from the cast, the production values, and the music, of course. Thank you, Robert. Chris Lloyd, Big Bad Mama, Moffy, Pens, and Kong vs. Godzilla. Oh, Angie Dickinson. And Chris writes, early 1970s skin flicks seem positively quaint nowadays. We are old men. Tracy Foreigner writes The Last Blockbuster and Willy Wonka, the Wilder version. I did see The Last Blockbuster last week as well, Tracy. And it's interesting because I love physical video stores. And for a while, that was the only. So there is that underdog story about the title of the film, The Last Blockbuster. But we should never, ever forget that Blockbuster killed mom-and-pop shops. So, yes, there is some nostalgia, but there's also, you know, you should never forget what it did is what it, the other thing that it did as well when it came to local businesses. So, yeah, but I still watch The Underdog's Tale. Interesting that Blockbuster's became the underdog after a while. Yes, Keith, I got your message. I'm working on that. JC writes, did I mention Kumar yet? Documentary with a crazy ending. Also watched The Third Man. Love, love, love. Lisa writes, Main Street and La Templaza series. Chris writes, Lars and the Real Girl. All right, Chris Kirshner, thank you. Howell writes, Amazon Women on the Moon. Carrie writes, Beauty and the Beast, the one with real people. So just make it. There's so many versions of Beauty and the Beast. Got to be a little more specific. Mike writes, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Bad Trip, and Guest House. Mary writes, Parallax View and Catch-22. Sean writes, Stallone, Frank, that is. Gary writes, Lawrence of Arabia, Bridge on the River Kwai, and Days of Wine and Roses. Karen writes, The Trial of Chicago 7. Should be required viewing for youngsters 18 to 70, especially for its resonance with current events. I enjoyed the acting and editing. The 2 hours went by fast. I don't remember the soundtrack, though, so that's an aspect that could have added to the overall meaning. The whole world is watching. Well, Karen, to a certain degree, some film folks have said if you don't notice the soundtrack, then the soundtrack did its job. I think there are exceptions to that rule. Ennio Morricone, Hans Zimmer, but I understand what you're saying there. But I'm glad you enjoyed The Trial of Chicago 7. Look for the documentary Chicago 10. Just saying. And finally, Nancy writes Mank and Lovelace. Hopefully not as a double feature. So there you go, friends. And now, friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. You just might have to dig a little bit. There's also the award stuff. That's the Academy Awards are happening at the end of the month. So hope you're staying safe. Hope you're staying healthy. Hope you're staying sane. Hope you're being good to one another. Hope you get to watch some new, or at least new to you, films, as well as falling back on old favorites. And I'll try to be better next week and try to catch up on some titles. And I miss you, Ed. Thank you. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
Okay. We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!